Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, we have been on this call for probably like 45 minutes at this point before we started recording, because we just opened registration for Roll for Topic Con 2024.
We did indeed. And yeah. What a smooth process that was.
Wow, we've learned a lot for next year. I apologize. Yeah, it is so we were just clicking all the buttons. We accidentally opened registration a little bit too early, and some people were just sort of ready and waiting. I presume they were just refreshing the page just to see when it would go live. And we've already sold a number of badges, which is just really great. It's always a little bit nerve-wracking. You are kind of plopping down a bunch of money to register and like sign up for a space and just kind of hoping that people are going to come. But I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah, if you're listening, you know exactly who you are, you sickos that were like registered within like 30 seconds of us turning
on. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. So the con, just real quick, like, so this is a con that we've been doing for a few years, and this is for people who have been on the show and kind of like friends and family of people like that. So if you think you should be able to come and you want to come, send us a message somehow, and we'll make sure that you get access to it. But it's usually a very good time. I'm extremely excited. We've already started getting some ideas of what people might want to be running at this, and it is predictably not just like a bunch of D&D one shots. It's a lot of kind of zany ideas.
Yeah, our theme this year is One Last Score, which is pretty evocative of like a heisty type scenario, but I also anticipate we're going to get some interesting twists on that premise, right?
Yes. And yeah, so Andy, I actually wanted to today, because we don't have a ton of time to record today, but I did want to bring this up with you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the game that I want to run for the con.
And I have
sort of a specific thing that I want to ask you about.
You are jumping in early into this, my friend. So yes, let's hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to keep it somewhat vague because I'm still sort of trying to figure this out exactly what I want to do. But I want to run a game in which I have sort of a number of mini games, if you will, inside of the game that I'm running. So like we'll be telling a story together, doing like typical role-playing game stuff. But then on top of that, I want to add in elements from other games. So first of all, I guess, have you ever done this, or have you ever seen this happen at the table and seen it happen well?
Well, I have to tell you, I've been playing through the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which is part two of the like epic-sized remake of Final Fantasy VII. The
video game. this is like Kingdom Hearts level naming.
And I have played I've played about 300,000 mini games so far.
Yeah,
which are games set into the game that deviate entirely from like the quote normal mechanics that the game has been training you to use.
Yeah,
have I used these in tabletop role playing games? I don't know. Maybe I'll have to think about it, but. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about what you have in mind?
There's one that I'm for sure sold on, and I don't want to go into that too far. So the one that I'm trying to figure out is, so like the game that I'm going to be running, at some point, the players are going to be attending a joust, like a medieval style joust.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there's going to be an element of them sort of walking around, talking to people, gathering information, that sort of stuff. But I also want the joust itself to happen. So I had pitched this on the Discord. I was like, hey, does anyone have any really good mechanics for running a joust in a game? And then Tim Saucer, of course, just was kind of snarkily said, hey, just play Joust for the Atari 2600 when you get to that segment of the game. It really sort of like it stopped me in my tracks. I think he was joking about that. But at the same time, I'm like, that actually is kind of a fun idea, because it's like, you know, you're already going to be abstracting what jousting actually is at that point, so like why not just make it into something else, right? And so like there's ways I think I could make that more interesting story-wise and stuff like that, but it does have my brain sort of going now of just like, oh, like what are different sort of resolution mechanics or something like that for like these kind of like big markers in the story that you're telling.
Well, here's a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. So why aren't you going to use the mechanics of whatever role-playing game you're running to resolve the joust? And I don't mean that as like a weird accusatory question. So yeah. Like what is dissatisfying about just using the mechanical resolution system for your game to do the joust?
Well there's two things. One is I don't have a system yet for it. So like there's Like I'm a little bit like looking at this as a greenfield setup, right? Like I'm not too worried about like finding a system to run the game in, but if I'm already sort of thinking about like how to break out of that already, I'm like, well, let's just sort of make my own thing. If I could find the right, like for jousting in particular, if I could find the right system to use, great. But if I'm already looking at the game as like, how can I kind of make this a collection of these really distinct, sort of very different mechanical things, like why not sort of look like way outside, kind of think like really outside the box?
The context is this is a convention game. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of outside the ordinary experience that you expect from a tabletop RPG game.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, I mean, again, Final Fantasy VII's on my mind just because I have played a million mini games recently in that game. And do you want to divorce the results of the joust from what would normally happen if you just made a bunch of skill rolls mm-hmm. using whatever your system at the table is? Do you want it to be more exciting? Do you mm-hmm. want it to allow for people to succeed who maybe mechanically within the game you're running would not succeed? Like, what are your goals for it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. My goal for it is mostly to make it a memorable part of the game. So I think there would be, you know, there's going to be dice rolls all over the place, right? In it, right? Like, so you'll still have sort of the trappings of a typical tabletop game. But what I want to do is make sure that like the, like kind of the high point of that scene, the actual joust, I want that to play in an exciting way such that it is very memorable. There is a large part of me that's like, I went to this, like, I want the players to say, I went to this con, we played this really fun story, and then when we jousted, like, all of a sudden there was an Atari set up, you know, like we played joust, or there was a like this, that, or the other mini game that we used to sort of resolve this mechanic, and it was a really like fun experience. And I'm not saying that you can't get that with dice rolling, but like there's something about the drawing in something that is entirely sort of separate from the game that you're running and placing that in as the resolution mechanic or what have you, does have sort of my brain engaged in a way that like is a little bit surprising to me. But also like makes total sense to me too.
That makes total sense. Yeah. So my initial thoughts are, so first of all, you know, it would be the talk of the town if you had, you know, an old CRT TV connected to an Atari there to run the jousting thing. Here's what you would not get if you ran that, or if you handed out like those broomstick pony things to people, or like, you know, here's a Nerf sword, you joust it out.
Yeah.
So I think you would want to and have some way to reflect who the characters are as defined by the mechanics of the game you've been playing and what they've been doing to prepare for the joust. Like, so, like, I mean, you could stop the game and have a quick game of cornhole or whatever like that to decide who wins, but that wouldn't really reflect like who in the game, whose characters have been are like well prepared for this joust. What have they been doing in the game to ensure their success? So I feel like what you're looking for is some sort of outside the box activity that nevertheless lets you provide a little bit of input based on their in character personas or actions, right?
Yeah, that is a really good way to think about it, because I've been thinking a bit about that of like, okay, well, if we just play joust, then it's going to come down to like who has the muscle memory that they developed when they were young to play this game. Thinking along those lines, I mean, you could do pretty simple stuff, just like if they've done particularly well in the build up to the joust, maybe like, right, whoever's kind of facing off against them, so probably me as the GM, like if they've done really well, I have to stand like 20 feet back or something like that, right? Like, so it's hard for me to see. Or we can set up some sort of like system where at any time during the game they can pull my controller, like the controller port out for 3 seconds or something like that, right? Yeah, but I think I'm right there with you. Like, it can't just be like a straight, like, okay, like now we're gonna stop and go play this video game for a little bit. It's gotta tie into what's happening with the larger narrative.
Yeah, so I don't know that I have necessarily a recommendation, but like some easy things to think about are like the more advantages you have within the tabletop RPG, like the more shots you get or the more turns you take in whatever your kind of real life version of this is. Or I really liked what you said for the target starts out close to you if you have a big in-game advantage it starts out farther, you know.
Yeah,
I like where you're thinking with that. So I guess I don't have a good joust system for you. If you do play the Atari Joust game, I have to caution you, like, that game requires a lot of, like, not necessarily intuitive understanding of which pixels to target. So, like, but I like where you're going with this. And I guess my only advice would be, if you're going to do an outside the tabletop activity to resolve this, just think of some way you can throw a boon or a bane at mm-hmm. people whose characters within the tabletop RPG would merit that. Because it would be dumb to have the trained knight who's been training for this for 3 years or something like that to not have some leg up on the competition mm-hmm. versus the rando person, right, who happens to be better at Joust the Atari video game. So
So
I don't know. I think it would be really fun. Given that advice, I also think, you know, nobody would care if you were like, okay, we're going to stop and we're going to play Atari Joust.
Yeah.
That would be the takeaway. Not, I played Atari Joust and somehow I should have had some benefits. You know what I mean? No one's going to complain about it. So if you're thinking about fun, just like think about what the thing that would delight you most would be.
Mm-hmm.
But like, let me encourage you to like, to pick an activity that can be like weighted in some way.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. just was thinking like what if one of the characters was like an ostrich farmer, right? It's like, of course they would be better at Joust than everybody else.
Well, obviously. Yes.
Yeah. I think I need to figure out, and it sounds like I need to do a little bit of thinking and probably find an emulator and, you know, try it out too, and just like see, like, are there ways to sort of make it more mechanically satisfying, I guess, than just kind of playing it straight. I played in a short campaign with Kyle Latino a long time ago. So he's one of the co-hosts of Splat Book, which is our sister show. And Kyle, at one point in the game, like one of the sessions, we actually stopped and played like a separate like board game, like almost like a board game, but using our characters. And like, so we're sort of playing the game, role-playing as our characters, how they would in that. And it was a really interesting way to handle that part of the story, and I really liked it. It's just sort of stuck in my mind. Like, the rest of the game was like, the rest of the campaign was really fun and all that, but like that session in particular, like, it just really stuck out to me as like, oh, this was a really cool and compelling way to tell like a little bit of a story, because like, you get away from the mechanics that you're used to a little bit, and you have to think about your character in a different way. Your mechanics influence your character and how you play your character and what you learn about them and all those things.
Well, my mind went to my early gaming in the kind of setting of Battletech. Battletech is like a war game, and there is a role-playing side to Battletech. So there's a Battletech role-playing game, and I remember as a youngster playing and hitting this wall and never really figuring it out. Like, so, all right, so you're playing the Battletech role-playing game. You're like negotiating, going through social encounters and whatever. But at some point, the PCs are all going to wind up in the cockpit of a mech, yes. Right?
Yeah.
And so at that point, what the published game wanted you to do at the time was like, okay, switch over to the Battletech war game, play this out, and then pick it back up.
Yeah.
But the Battletech war game is a good Battletech game is one where you have like a 50-50% chance of winning, right? Mm-hmm. You're up against like a carefully calibrated, even matchup. You don't want every battle in your role-playing game to have like a 50-50 chance of killing all the characters,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But like, so these are games that have like fundamentally different things that make them fun and tense and exciting. And I never figured that out exactly. But that would be the main experience I have of like, okay, we're playing a role-playing game, and now there's this like subsection of it that we're going to resolve using this entirely different game rule system. In the case of Battletech, that entirely different game rule system also had different, like, you know, different things that made it work. And so it didn't feel right for the role-playing game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you think that was mostly because there was such a high chance of like death, death for the player?
Well, yes. I mean, it has, in retrospect, has made me think a lot about like, what is the purpose of like combat in an RPG, right? Mm-hmm. And in like, if you're talking about D&D, the purpose of combat is almost never to like provide a down to the wire, like life or death situation for the PCs, right? Mm-hmm. There's tons of uses for combat that aren't, this is like a complete coin toss. Who's going to live at the end of this?
Yeah.
And so like combat in an RPG, in most RPGs, just serves a different purpose than it does in like a board game where you're sitting down to have one fight and it's going to take 2 hours to play out and like someone will be the winner or the loser. Well, RPGs don't map super well to that like win loss binary like condition that board games need. It muddies the water when you are basically playing games that rely on different gamey things to make them fun. And the fun for the Battletech war game is it's like a basically a 50-50 chance you'll survive. The fun for like an RPG combat scene is like, of course you're going to survive. How much are you going to, how many resources are you going to have to sacrifice to survive? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are people who play tabletop role-playing games with that mentality of like, who's going to win. Like, I don't necessarily want to play with them either, but like, it's, yeah, it is an interesting kind of thing to think about. Yeah. Cause like, you know, a lot of tabletop role-playing game players will also play board games, right? It just sort of like, it goes back and forth. There are a number of board game players who will never touch D&D, right? Cause it's just like, they sort of want or need or whatever, like those kind of those win conditions. If what you really want is a board game in the moment, like D&D is not going to satisfy that, like, right, and vice versa. It is interesting to think about, though, because like I think there's also like there's fun in the mechanics of a board game. Oftentimes, like, I think there's just like fun in kind of piecing things together, and it gives you sort of like, it scratches an itch for me that's like more like puzzle oriented almost than what you can get in a tabletop game. At the end of the day, I'm not super competitive, so I don't really sort of care, like, if I win or lose when I'm playing a board game. Like, so that the satisfaction for me is rarely on the, like, oh, like, I've got a win streak going or whatever, whatever on that. Like, it's much more like, that was fun, like a fun sort of puzzle to figure out. Like, even just, yeah, figuring out the rules and figuring out whatever system I'm sort of, like, generating at the, like, whatever game I'm playing.
I guess to sum up, I don't think you would go wrong just doing something silly. No one's going to complain that at a convention they went to, you paused and all played cornhole for, like, 30 minutes to determine who won the joust. But, you know, see what you can do to kind of weight that figurative cornhole match, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and if you have further thoughts, I think it'd be fun to revisit them on future episodes of this show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. What I'm really hearing you saying is you want to play cornhole at the con.
Yeah. I didn't grow up in the Midwest, so cornhole was new to me when I came out here. And no, I don't want to play cornhole. Cornhole is the worst. So,
Yeah, this is like a full tangent. So I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Illinois in the suburbs of Chicago. And like, I had never seen or heard of cornhole until all of a sudden I felt like it was like 2006-ish. It was just like, that was the thing that was everywhere at every outdoor barbecue that you went to. And it's bewildering to me. I don't mind it, but I also am pretty bored with it pretty fast.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of depth to it, right? I mean,
I'm sure there's a ton of depth if you get into it, but really I just need a character sheet is what it really comes down to.
Yes. Perfect.
Yeah. So Andy, I've got one other thing I wanted to mention. So I went to a Protospiel recently. Have you heard of this before?
This is a convention where you play like prototype games or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm not sure if they're everywhere, but there's at least one in Michigan, sort of nearby where I live. Yeah. So this is, it's people who are prototyping board games of all sorts. And they're sort of, their motto is like, there's nothing, like there's no state of like unfinished that like we will not accept. So it's really like anybody who has like an idea that they're trying to workshop. It's a bunch of people who like love board games that get together at this thing. So I ended up bringing my daughter along with me and we played one game. It was one of her friend's games. We sort of decided to go sort of very last minute. So we went to it and it was one of her friends was making a board game. So she's 9. So this is an 8-year-old's board game or a 6-year-old's, 7-year-old's board game that she's.
I really want details on this game.
Yeah. So continue. it was, I'm going to get the name wrong. It was something like Magical Kitties or like, you know, Kitty Adventure or something like that. And like the game itself was definitely a prototype. It needed some work, but there was a lot of like really interesting ideas there that like are very much the sort of thing that like a kid would think of, right? Like, yeah, there was a cool mechanic in there that she had where you would draw cards sort of every turn, and like depending on what the card had on it, like you could, you know, take a special action or something like that. But you occasionally would draw a card that would give you a special action, but also would give someone else a special action based on like if a color matched up correctly. Like, so there's like all these like really clever ideas. And of course she's the daughter of someone who plays lots of board games, and he was there prototyping his board game and stuff, you know, so like a situation where like she sort of knew what she was doing going into it. But it was really fun to sort of like sit down and play even like, you know, a game sort of made by a child and be like, oh, like how would I think about like offering feedback for this, and like what was fun, like what wasn't, and that sort of stuff. So we played that game, and then afterwards at Protosfield they had a table full of stuff from, I think it's thegamecrafter.com or something like that. There's this website where you can print out stuff that you want for your prototype games, and they just had a ton of like random materials laid out. Like, so anything that, like, if you just needed a bunch of meeples for the game, you're like, oh, like actually fun. This would be really helpful. You could go over and you just grab what you needed, lots of little like 3D printed pieces, that sort of stuff. Yeah, so after we were done, then the girls that I was with just sat down and were prototyping out new games right at the table. And my daughter got really into it, and she started to make a game that started with sort of no idea and then slowly morphed into something that was like very tabletop, you know, like D&D adjacent. Like, and she's never played played before. She was just sort of coming up with characters and, you know, rules. Her main rule was no betrayals. You're not allowed to have any betrayals in the game. It was very important to her.
But, sort of kills the any game right up.
Yes, there, doesn't it, does. Like, yeah. But it was really cute, like watching her and like, yeah. But it was super fun. Yeah, it just sort of made me get excited about board games a little bit again. Like, I haven't played much lately. Yeah, and like it was also just fun to go to like a different convention that I wouldn't normally go to, and just sort of see like the different scene, because like I mentioned, there are people there who are playing someone else's prototype, and they were actively sitting there taking notes like about like what was going on in the game, like, you know, writing them down, like trying to figure out like what was going on and offering feedback and stuff. Yeah, so it was really cool.
A couple months ago, someone in our Discord, we'll call him codename Adam, has been playtesting a game of his, and it was neat to participate in the playtesting of that. Not only because the game was fun, but he had specific questions he wanted answered. At the end of the game, he wasn't like, so what did you guys think? It was like, here's a page with the questions I need you to answer yes or no to. It was a neat little picture into like how you evaluate like how effective a game is at doing the thing that the creator wants it to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. It's a really valuable experience. And I know you and I have both had experience of like you're kind of coming up with a game idea. And it's like, it's not until you put it in front of someone that you really realize like, oh, this isn't going to work at all. Like, and I've had this experience happen with making video games too, where it's just like, it's a tremendous amount of effort even just to get something sort of working on the screen at all. And then you put it in front of people and they're just like, I don't want to play this. Like, you know, it's like, that can be very demoralizing, but also really useful before you get too far into it. So
are you going to play test your game before you run it at the con?
Yeah, I might. If I end up doing as much sort of like wacky stuff as I'm planning at this point, I think I might. Yeah, so we'll see how that plans out. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the people I would play test it with are going to plan on coming to the con, but maybe I'll try to find someone who has a scheduling conflict and see if they can they can come by.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. All right, well, we should wrap it up here. I know we both got to get back to what we're doing. So we've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network. Our sister show, The Splat Book with John Corey and Kyle Latino, is amazing. I just finished up listening to the actual play that Andy was on recently. They played Starborg. It was really fun.
That was so fun.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite moment from that like replay?
I think my favorite moment from that replay was in the second episode. You were trying to roll. I won't give too much away. You were trying to roll for something, and it was not going well at all. And like everybody at the table was pouring all of their resources into it. And I will not say what happened, lest I give away too much. But yeah, it was really fun. I mean, Kyle ran that. He's an amazing GM. They did a really fun job editing it too, with some music stuff in there as well. So yeah, for sure, go take a listen to that. It's a fun actual play to listen to, and then everything else that they do is also really great. Yeah. All right, I think that does it for us. You got anything else, Andy?
Nope, I don't think so. Nothing. They can't wait till the next episode.
Yes, stay tuned. All right, well, I've been Chris Salzman.
I have been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.